For years, I was so fed up with shampoo, I just stopped washing my hair. I quit completely. I was so sick of poofy, frizzy, limp hair, distorting my natural oils. Until a few months ago, I found Modern Mammals, and it changed everything. And by the way, right now you can visit modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. So check that out. So look, I heard about this through the podcast, and before I agreed to advertise, they sent it to me, and I was reluctant. But let me tell you, I should not have been. This stuff is absolutely magical. My hair felt better, smelled way better, and most importantly, looked better. And I know it will do the same for you as well. It doesn't have those hair-ruining chemicals like other products, and it doesn't leave any leftover residues. It works. Don't believe me? Go read their awesome reviews online as well. Go to modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code LSS. Don't forget to use our promo code LSS so they know we sent you.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to yet another edition of the podcast, episode 303. Blows my mind that I have done this many podcasts, but who else was I going to get for episode 303? Come on, right? So I did it. I made it happen. Nat from 303 is here. He's one of the best, intelligent, well-spoken, a great dude, and what a career 303 has had. Just exploded onto the scene in 2008, that lightning in a bottle success that I talk about on the show, and they've just continued to make great records. They have a new one out called Need. It's out right now. It's awesome. And this was a really, really great and overdue conversation from a guy that I have a lot of admiration and respect for. So let's go, baby. 303 on episode 303. I'm so stoked. Before we get into that, a couple of reminders. You can always email me. You can get in touch. leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read all my emails. I try to get back to everybody. If you want to support this show, now don't worry, it'll always be free for your listening pleasure. Don't worry, it'll always be free. However, I do rely on listener support, and those people I call my sinners. And I love you all so much. You keep the lights on around here, you keep this thing coming at you every single week. If you want to be a sinner, if you want to support, head over to leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. That gets you in the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club, and it costs as little as $6 a month, which is like half a beer in Las Vegas or something. I don't know. I'm in Las Vegas right now, so that's what I'm thinking about. But everybody knows you don't buy beer in Las Vegas. You just sit at a slot machine and, you know, hit minimum bet until the waitress comes around, and then you can tip her like
$2 and then you get a beer and it's much better. Anyway, but I digress. $6 a month. It gets you in leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. In other news with me, there's been a lot going on. Silverstein, busy. We're going on tour really soon with our best buddies, Beartooth. You're going to want to get tickets for that. The Devil Wears Prada and Era are also on that tour. As we're talking about in this episode a lot as well, Slam Dunk Festival, When We Were Young Festival right here in Vegas. It's exciting stuff. It's very, very exciting stuff. I couldn't be more stoked. So get on all that stuff. Come say hi. It's an exciting year, you know? 2020, well, come on, it sucked. And then going into 2021, a lot of people were like, woo, 2021. I was like, I don't know, man. What reason do we think 2021 is going to be any good? And it was worse than 2020. But 2022, I am feeling pretty, pretty, pretty good. So let's go. And we're going to kick it off right now with this podcast with my buddy, Nat, from 303. That I'm a vegetarian and I ain't fucking scared of him. She wants to touch me, woo. She wants to love me, woo. She'll never leave me, woo.
I think I can take the click off, right? We're not podcasting to 120 BPM.
That would be, I don't know, that'd be better or worse, you know? Maybe it would stop me from talking so fast, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, we could just have a BPM that we can kind of speed up and slow down. Like when we're kind of just waffle on about some bullshit, we can just kind of, you know, slow it down.
I love it. I'm here with Nat from 303. Dude, this is awesome. And this is a special episode because this is episode 303.
Get out of town.
Of my podcast. And I said, well, I have to get 303 for this episode. You didn't know that?
No, man. That's awesome.
That was my pitch. So that was like, okay, how am I going to nail down these rock stars? I have to have like a cool story, you know?
They didn't even, man, we were down to do it if it was episode 1000. Like, we didn't know there was this jewel, crowning jewel of an episode.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I had episode 300. I had Jake from Converge. It was a, you know, really big, big episode for me. And then I was thinking about it. I'm like, wait a second. There's something here. And I've always loved you guys. I've always, every, you know, little conversation we've had, you know, through Warped Tour or whatever it was, you were always such a nice guy. So I really do appreciate you doing this.
Oh, man. Likewise. Thank you, guys. Thank you. And it's not just because you're Canadian. You're a very nice guy as well.
Well, I know you got to think for Canadians, right? So
I sure do.
For people that don't know, Nat's wife, Liz, I know her. Well, obviously, like every Canadian knows every Canadian. She's Canadian, so I know her.
That's true. Now, yeah, she started as a VJ on Much Music.
Exactly.
And so I'm sure, I mean, she obviously knows you guys really well. And, you know, we actually spent a good amount of time in Toronto. I would go back and forth and we lived there for a while. And yeah man, it's just, I mean, gosh, I'm lucky to have Liz in my life. And then also just to know so many Canadians, man. We're out in LA now and I feel like we know more Canadians out here than we knew in Toronto. So
it's awesome. It's true. I don't know. It's really weird. I find pretty much wherever I go in the world, I know I'm going to run into somebody from, you know, and everyone just says, oh yeah, it's like, yeah, I'm from Toronto. And then you talk to them and it's like, wait a second, you're actually not from Toronto. You're from like the block I grew up in the suburbs or whatever, you know, it's like, it's the smallest world with that stuff.
That's true, man. You're like an actual OG real Torontonian, however, like, are you suburbs or what are you?
I'm a suburban kid. I'm the city I'm from is called Oakville.
Oh yeah.
So it's about 30 minutes west.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've never claimed Toronto. Like our band, we always claimed Burlington. We never wanted to be the band that says like, yeah, we're hard, we're from Detroit, when like you're, you know what I mean, like that kind of thing. So we were always careful not to say we were from Toronto, even though I lived downtown for 8 years and like the rest of the band is still downtown. So, you know, but yeah, I mean, You guys have done that too. I mean, you guys don't claim Denver. You guys still keep it true with your Boulder roots.
Oh, that's right, man. Yeah, we're Boulder born and bred and through. Actually, no, not born. I was born in Lincoln, Nebraska, believe it or not. Don't this, no one's going to listen to this, right?
You don't want to admit it?
No, it's funny. I mean, I was, you know, fortunate enough to get out of Lincoln, Nebraska when I was 3 years old. So I then was kind of raised in Boulder, Colorado, which is, it's an amazing place, man. I feel like between, you know, those where you're at in Ontario, it's like, it's a nice, they're just nice places to grow up. They nurture a lot of, I mean, for us, you know, live music was such a hotbed out there in Colorado when we were growing up in high school and even when we were kids going to shows with our parents and stuff. So yeah, it's funny, man, because like I feel like you can get lost a little bit in like repping where you're from, especially, you know, our band name is fucking 303. So very it's like hard. It's like we can get very lost in our local pride, but it's true, man. It is a lot of what makes, you know, our ethos, and it's like a fundamental building block of what our band and our project, and it really is representative of what we want to do. So it's integral.
Well, to reference another Canadian about Lincoln, Nebraska, I think it's Dallas Green, you know, City in Color, very famous Canadian. He has a song, I think, where he says, "I've been to Lincoln, Nebraska, and I can tell you that place ain't worth shit," or something like that. Like you talk shit on a song, and I think I heard that song before I ever went to Lincoln, Nebraska, and I was expecting the worst,
like a fucking war zone. Yeah.
I kind of like it. I think it's kind of a nice place.
I mean, man, those Midwest towns are like they're charming in their own way. Yeah. And I feel like they're, you know, they're a lot different from like 20, 30 years ago. Like it's funny, man. I'm sure, you guys have toured like crazy. And I'm sure this is the same in your Canadian touring and in your American touring. Like I remember even, you know, you guys have been touring longer than we have, but when we started touring, like you go to towns and like you go to look for a beer and they had like Bud Light and like Coors Light on tap. Now every town not only has like fancy beers and like little artisan pizza places, but they have like a microbrewery and like,
for sure.
And like, you know, every kind of things have come a long way in terms of the stupid comforts that we as touring creatures kind of rely on.
Right. I mean, you guys are very famous vegetarians too, obviously from the song. You know, think about that, like trying to tour and eat vegan food in like 2003, like forget about it.
Yeah. You're basically just eating like Oreos back there. Aren't Oreos vegan?
They are. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, no, now it's like you can go to a fucking Applebee's and they have something for you. It's like, okay, wow. The world is really getting better.
Yeah, true.
So, first of all, congrats on the new album, by the way. I've really enjoyed it. It's
oh, thank you, man. Thanks so much.
It's great. It kind of has all the classic, you know, things I love about 303. And, you know, I remember the first time very, very vividly when I first heard your band. It was in Toronto. I walked into the Warped Tour and, you know, it's Warped Tour. I didn't know where the hell I was going. And I pretty much accidentally bumped into, you know, the stage you guys are playing on. And instantly, like, I had no idea who you were. Instantly,
you're
I
like,
really
what
felt
the fuck is going on
like,
here?
A little bit. Yeah, yeah, I'm not going to lie. Sure. But sure. After about 30 seconds, I was like, okay, I'm digging this. Like, it felt very fresh what you were doing. And obviously, there had been, you know, some bands incorporating rap, like, and scene music and stuff. But I had to know who you guys were immediately because there was something different right away that grabbed me. And I think obviously grabbed a lot of people that summer.
Yeah, thanks, man. I mean, I think that's, you know, in retrospect, and even at the time that it was happening, Warped Tour was a, you know, another thing is so integral to our band because it was,
yeah,
it's funny, man. I didn't grow up in that scene at all. So the first time I ever went to Warped Tour was when we played Warped Tour I think we played one show in 2007 just in Denver, and it was so eye-opening for me. And then when we got offered to do the whole thing in 2008, we were like, yeah, sure, let's do it. And that was really our first tour. And I think it was, you know, it's provided such a springboard for a lot of bands and a lot of bands that, you know, obviously that are maybe more fit into the, you know, the quote unquote scene of those times. And then a lot of other bands that are, you know, like the Black Eyed Peas were on Warped Tour.
I saw them play Warped Tour back in the day. Yeah.
And I think that for us, for sure, like the confluence of all that stuff, man, that was kind of the apogee of MySpace's reach for music, you know, MySpace, which provided like really the first forum for all any band from anywhere to have the same kind of forum as any band from anywhere. So like, you know, whether you're signed or unsigned or had made a studio record or were just like us, like dicking around on your laptops in a basement in Boulder, Colorado, you know, you had the same reach and kind of, you know, Warped Tour kind of provides the analogous like physical experience for that, where all the bands on Warped Tour, you know, it's a relatively cheap, accessible festival. It's really geared towards, or it was, I should say, really geared towards, you know, the kids come in and making sure it's a good show. And every band has the same forum. And I think for us, like, it was important to just do our own thing. And we sounded different. We were weird. And like that first year, we didn't have any of our homies playing on stage with us. It was literally just playback and like a hip hop setup. Yeah. And we were just going ape shit on stage every day and just playing our music, man. And I think that, like, you know, we carved out this little weird kind of, you know, incongruous scene on that tour. And you're playing to a captive audience every day, which is kind of a beautiful thing as a band, you know? And, I think we, for better or for worse, we kind of like got a good amount of our fans from that. Like just being like people walking by being like, what the fuck is this? Oh, this is kind of catchy, whatever. These guys don't take themselves too seriously. They're having fun. It seems like the crowd are having fun. And that's kind of that's our beginning mantra. And it kind of goes through everything that we do, through our new music, through videos, through shows, through everything. We try to keep that kind of steady.
For sure. We could end it right there, but we're not going to. 2008 is this just, first of all, it's kind of a weird time in music, right? Because a lot of the, you know, big bands, it's been like a few years since, you know, bands like Taking Back Sunday emerged and like those real big scene bands. And there was this kind of opening where a lot of stuff had been big records, you know, in the scene. And there was this like kind of window where I guess, you know, in hindsight, you guys had this opportunity to explode, but you must not have expected this at all. I mean, Photo Finish Records was not what they are today. There were some like ties to a major label. Like maybe there was a conversation like, hey, maybe we can get this thing on the radio, but you must have had no expectation.
Dude, like literally none, Shane. Like it's crazy because it really, like, overall for me, I feel really fortunate that it was very much a hobby that progressively over the course of 4 or 5 years developed into like, oh, this is a career, you know? And it was so great in that sense because it's what we did for fun. And you know, at that time, 2008, yeah, like you said, there was this kind of weird kind of calm, I guess, at the eye of the storm in that scene. And, you know, I think a lot of it we did ignorantly, but like we just had fun. I was supposed to go to med school. I was actually, we agreed to do that Warped Tour in 2008. And I was with Sean, my bandmate, I was like, yeah, man, I'll do it, but I got to hop off like two and a half weeks early to start med school because that's kind of what I'm doing. That's what I've been gearing my whole life towards. And this music thing is amazingly fun, but it was really a hobby. And it was really kind of the first, you know, two weeks of Warped Tour was like, shit, man, we were showing up to, you know, Houston and there were like 1,000 kids waiting to see us. And we had never been to that town before, much less, you know, played a show there. So it was really eye-opening. And really, really unexpected. And like, I remember, you know, we had just kind of earlier that summer, the late spring, finished that first studio record that we did with Matt Squire and in Beltsville, Maryland, which was amazing because, you know, we've always written and produced our stuff. I've produced our stuff. And then going in and like co-producing with Matt and really kind of learning all that technique was so amazing. But like, I was so ignorant to everything. Like I remember him saying, oh, you know, this song that's on the record called Colorado Sunrise. Yeah, this could be your second single. And I was like, yeah, man. But realistically, I was like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, I thought, because back in my days, like, because I used to DJ, I used to hip hop DJ. And I was like, because to me, the single is like, oh, the single. Yeah, that's the one that has the acapella and the instrumental. And you can you can buy it if you don't want to spend $15 on the full record. Like you can buy the single for cheaper and then you can also mix in and out of it. So I didn't understand what a single was in that it was, you know, kind of the flag bearer for your project. And like it was a focus track and shit. I had no idea.
Right.
And so
amazing.
You know, photo finish, Matt Galley, you know, took a punt on us. I mean, we were a cheap sign for him. I think, you know, we did a very small record deal. I remember using our family dog's paw print as the signature on the deal. And I think the vast majority of it went to the lawyer who helped administrate it. And, right. You know, when we were making that record, it was like, I was just stoked that our homies would hear a record that was like more or less professionally made.
Wow.
And everything else. Yeah.
Gold record.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, dude.
And everything else was just such a pleasant and cool surprise. And I think that was amazing because, you know, again, I feel so fortunate that like we didn't know the pitfalls. And so everything was just a beautiful new opportunity. It was like, oh, you can, you know, play shows all across the world. You can play this Warped Tour festival. You can, all of a sudden, you guys want to go play overseas. Yeah. You have an opportunity to feature on all this cool stuff and get these great experiences. So, man, it was really amazing in that sense. And
it's crazy.
It has continued to be.
Even with all your success, do you ever have maybe moments or times or have in the past where you go, well, medical school would be interesting. Like maybe I'm not like having a great time right now in, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like maybe a shitty place to tour. I'm just going to say Ohio. And you know, and you're like, I kind of want to be home with my wife right now. Like it would be okay to be a doctor. Do you ever think about that?
Yeah. The older I get for sure, man. Like I can't, we used to like play shows and then go party and like be up till two and then go do two or three and then go do like a radio promo thing at 7 a.m. and then go hop on an airplane. And that shit now it's like, man, I play a show and I'm in bed afterwards. Like, and some of those times when it's just travel and just being tired. And sometimes you're like, man, it'd be nice to have a little bit more fix of a schedule. But like, you know, I mean, I'm sure any sort of doctor would tell you horror stories about that shit too. So I think it's, in some ways, grass is always greener on the other side, but you know, we've had such a great time doing this thing and have been so fortunate to do it surrounded by great people, you know, the people we work with and then have met such great folks along the way, some of our best friends, you know, and touring with bands like you guys, man, and really experiencing this kind of scene of music and just a broader, I don't know. I mean, that's one thing that I've kind of recognized over the past couple of years is especially kind of like having it all taken away from you, you know, and then kind of this piecewise kind of like start stop thing. Right. It's like you realize that people in music are pretty, on the whole, pretty good people, man. Pretty engaged, pretty just good kind of humans. So it's unfortunate to be in that world.
To have Matt Squire, you know, produce that debut album. Obviously you guys do a lot of your own producing, you know, and what did you say? Dicking around with laptops in the basement or whatever?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Man.
But, you know, that's a guy that's not known for hip hop, especially at that time, right? I mean, probably at that time he was known for, well, obviously Panic at the Disco, but like Under Oath and Receiving End of Sirens, you know, like metal bands.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting choice, but he's also a guy that is very well loved and respected. Did he kind of take you under your wing, like when you didn't know what a single was, like to really explain, like take the time to explain things?
Totally, man. Totally. And I think, I think, you know, my kind of base, I mean, I grew up on all kinds of music, but making my own music, yeah, I was probably a little bit more based in hip hop than Matt was, but like Matt's favorite artist ever is Prince, you know, and there's so many kind of rhythm and blues and elements in Prince's music, and he's such a great musician, and especially, man, yeah, he was so great with us and just so dedicated to the project. I mean, that's one of the main things I learned from Matt is that, like, man, you know, back in the day we did that record in like 3 weeks, like 3.5 weeks maybe, and just working like a dog during that time and like really dedicating yourself to a project and really learning how to work from Matt was awesome. And so many techniques and, you know, and he's really a brilliant engineer, producer, mixer, everything in between. And such a great guy. So yeah, I mean, I was, especially at that age, man, I was like 23, 24 when we started working with Matt, and I was just a sponge for everything and learned so much technique and so much work ethic and everything from Matt. Yeah. I'm super thankful for him having done that.
So, okay, so you're in this very interesting spot, right? So this record blows up very unexpectedly. You're like a Warped Tour band, kind of, and you know you're in this
Warped Tour boy band,
right? Well, you I mean you're in the scene that is. A lot of people really love you and that you're different and everything. But then all of a sudden you get this lightning in a bottle mainstream success, right? Which can kind of alienate those people. Like, you know, maybe I'm a bad example, but like, you know, I wandered into Warped Tour and I saw you guys play and I was like, this is cool. And this is on a small stage. I dig this. And next thing I know, I'm hearing on the radio, you know, like, was there ever a weird... I mean, Katy Perry is on your record. Obviously, at that point, she was also on Warped Tour. But, you know, she played the fucking Super Bowl, right? Like, this is big shit. And was that hard to kind of navigate those waters of what your identity was or what you wanted it to be?
It was, yeah, a bit. It was a bit, especially because Sean and I, again, we were raised on like a lot of inherited different musics from our parents, you know, who grew up in the 60s and 70s. And then,
yeah,
but really on our own in that scene in Boulder, Colorado, one of the scenes where we kind of connected over was the underground hip hop scene, which was really vibrant in Colorado through Boulder and Denver, and, you know, saw so many great shows. But like a lot of the pretense for a lot of those bands, it's like, don't fucking sell out. Like, don't.
Yeah.
Like, this is a scene. And like, Sean tells a story that's really funny. I remember him, like, he tells a story of in high school, like walking into high school and this girl was crying. And he's like, what's the matter? And she was crying because one of her favorite bands had signed to a major label. You know, which I mean, in the mind of a 16-year-old kid, yeah, that could be, that's like devastating. And that's, you got to acknowledge it. But in retrospect for us is like pretty preposterous. But so, I mean, I think we came out at it from that side and then also very consciously from the other side. Like, we had been in that scene and we had seen for how great it was in its inclusivity. It was also pretty exclusive to people who came from different musical scenes or people who thought outside the box. And I think when it came time to make our own music was actually kind of a direct response to that, in that we wanted to make our music that was just, you know, really geared towards people having fun and people partying and people physically and kinetically dancing and just putting smiles on people's faces. Or, you know, if we were dealing lyrically with subject matter that was funny, like make people laugh, it could be a sad song, but there is some sort of edge to it that really kind of brings people in regardless of where they're from. And so, long story short, I guess when, you know, they tried to push our song to alternative radio. And at that time we're like, yeah, sure. We don't know what fucking radio is, but let's do it. And I think it had like middling success, not even. And I think after that first Warped Tour, they're like, guys, the label is wondering if you guys would be down to push this to mainstream radio. This was for our song, Don't Trust Me.
Yeah.
And this must've been in the summer, fall of 2008. And both Sean and I were like, we don't really want it. We had the kind of the shitty experience with alternative radio of like going in and playing your fucking song acoustically at 7 a.m. after you've been out.
That shit is the fucking worst. When people are interviewing you and they're just like, it's like sometimes I had one of those where they had the wrong band. They'd done research on the wrong band.
No. Oh yeah. My God. Did you guys play along?
So I didn't. It was too early and we were too over it to play along, but
you didn't have coffee yet.
Yeah, they thought we were Spitalfield. I never actually found out, but they're like, so you guys are from Chicago? It's like, nope.
That's so good. But yeah, you know how soul sucking it is, man. And it's like,
oh, yeah,
the last thing, you know, it sounds like shit. First off, when you're like playing, I mean, we had like won these Baby Taylor acoustic guitars that we just had on the bus that were like getting slept on and puked on and like whatever. And we would just bring that out and like crawl out of the bus at 7 a.m. and go like talk to these, you know, nice, but like overly peppy, jacked up fucking radio talk show hosts and whatever. And for what? Like for us, really the experience was the shows and like seeing people and meet and greets on Warped Tour and like doing our own shows and like these fucked up dingy venues, but had such a great vibe and everyone, you know, was sweaty and hot and packed and people were just letting go of everything and having so much fun. And so the radio game, we were like, nah, man, like that, we don't really want to go to pop radio. We don't see that as fun. And I think the label kind of was like, all right, guys, whatever. And went behind our back and just started seeding this thing. And it was amazing. It was amazing. And you know, kind of fast forward through it all, I think we managed to really kind of subconsciously and then consciously to just keep hold of our ethos. And that's, you know, not taking ourselves, being very serious about our music for sure, but not taking ourselves too seriously, not trying to wrap our music up in any sort of like, you know, I think there's a place for artistry that's like really camouflaged and really cool and really crafted image wise. And that's, you know, some of my favorite artists are like that, you know, artists like Prince and artists, you know, kind of along the years that have really crafted that image. For us, it was like the antithesis of that, man. We were just two fucking dudes just trying to make catchy shit that was fun, had a little bit of an edge, and most inclusively like brought people in. And so I think if, you know, we were able to extract that to a big popular audience with that same feeling, we felt like it didn't really water down what we were doing. And, you know, I can't speak for the OG fans. There might've been some girls crying in a high school hallway because we, you know, released a single on pop radio, but who knows?
That's great. That's all great.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's also, you guys came out at a time where music, scene music, Warped Tour music was very serious. You know what I mean? Everyone was taking themselves really seriously, right?
Totally.
But lyrically, I know I've always thought you guys have been, you know, far and away head and shoulders above a lot of other rap groups, or, you know, scene rap groups, whatever you want to call them. You and Sean are, you know, clearly very intelligent and, you know, you almost went to medical school. But I find also a lot of people maybe don't understand how tongue-in-cheek and sarcastic some of your music is. Like, maybe they're still in the mindset that you're linked with My Chemical Romance or something, like, you know, very serious. I don't know, like, what it is, but do you ever find that things get misinterpreted or like taken really seriously when you're like, I don't know, I didn't think this like, I didn't think Watt was going to go anywhere. Like, I'm sorry if something offended you.
No, you know, man, no, like, long story short, no, we get like we get asked, especially now, I think revisionism is something that we all go through, obviously, in our artistry and stuff. And along the way, we've gotten asked way more about it than anyone has ever raised anything up the flagpole about, you know, our music, either, you know, being too tongue in cheek or not serious enough or too serious or anything. I think people, you know, we give, sometimes I think as artists, you got to give your audience a bit more credit for being discerning about like what you're trying to do and why you're trying to do it. Like, people are smart and I think they, you know, especially in the scene that we were fortunate enough to grow up in, like, they're really engaged, man. And they're you know, they know a song is tongue in cheek when they hear it, and they know why. And I think that we've been, you know, it's been awesome to kind of really, at this point, spend, fuck, man, 15 years, like, engaging with people who are just allow us to do what we do. And I'm sure you and your band and your experience, like, that's one great thing about, like, I guess getting older as a musician and also just getting more experience, is that I feel like you have more time to reflect on that and be thankful about it and just, man, take every show for what it is, especially in these times, man. It's just a treasure.
Well, your new album, Need, it is out now. Congratulations again on that record. I think it's fantastic. And, you know, it's been a while since your last album, And obviously, I don't know how much of that had to do with the pandemic or whatever, but this record is obviously very aligned with your first album, you know, Want, Need, the album artwork and everything. How did this kind of come to be that you decided at this point in your career it was kind of the right time to, I don't want to call it a sequel to your debut because that's not exactly true, but at least to, you know, kind of shine a spotlight on, you know, your roots of your first album?
For sure, man. I mean, I think it's, you know, it is very overtly kind of a hearkening back to that stuff. And, you know, like I said, I think a lot of those foundational blocks of what we do, we've never really lost sight of. But then we really wanted to, I mean, fuck, like we went back in with Photo Finish, you know, our original label to make this record. And
yeah,
we really had time finally, actually, because of the pandemic, more or less. Like we started really buckling down and writing new songs for this right before the pandemic hit. And then the pandemic afforded us time, A, off the road, as I'm sure a lot of bands were, to have time to do this. And then, you know, these days, actually the lion's share of our time is doing a lot of writing and production for other projects. So for other,
yeah,
other artists and other, you know, everything from pop artists to some film and TV stuff to some sync work and kind of stuff that we've been really doing a lot of, you know, all along the way is sick. But this, you know, we really overtly like finally had time to come back and write, which was sick. And so I think, I think as you get older, as you get more experience as an artist, you do, like, that's one of the great things. I feel like you do get a bit more of a clear perspective, because for us in those early years, like in that Warped Tour, you know, from 2008, which was really that first tour for us, to like 2010, 2011, I'm sure you guys have had cycles like this too. We were on the road for like 9 months out of the year, probably international touring, yeah, you know, all over the place. And like, you don't get any fucking time to think, man. It's all kind of like reactive, and it's beautiful. It's amazing, but it's all, it's only kind of afterwards where you get some time to breathe, and over the past few years that we've gotten some time to like think about things. And so overtly, yeah, I think it was like what's our kind of reason, our raison d'être, if you will, for 303. And that's the kind of come back to this stuff and really try to capture really the root of what we do as a band and the root of our whole aesthetic, man. And I'm stoked that that you listened to it, and thank you for your very kind words too, man.
No, of course we do a show, on this podcast feed called New Noise, where we talk about new records. And my co-host absolutely loves your band. And on the release date, he wore his 303 shirt, you know, on Twitch, and, you know, just talked about how much, you know, he loves you guys. Sick. So of course it's a terrific record. And, you know, some cool features, Bert from the Used, 100 Gex. I mean, that's like, you're spanning like 2002 to 2022, you know, of popular bands. That's cool that you're the kind of band that can kind of incorporate those things.
Yeah, man, it was awesome. It was great. And, you know, we feel like we're kind of sandwiched right somewhere in between there, which is cool. And I think, working with Bert was sick. Like we've toured with Bert before, and they did a lot of that last Warped Tour year, 2018, that we were on all of. And it was great to really kind of spend some nice nights just getting to know Bert really well.
He's a trip, man.
He's a trip. He's great. And working on the record, that was like a true remotely done record. You know, that was, Sean and I wrote that while we were both in the same town in Boulder, Colorado, like separated by a couple miles, but at those times, like locked in, man. And we were on Zoom, and like I would go to his house and like hand him a fucking sanitized microphone and then like scurry away. And yeah, Bert, yeah, you know, yeah. Bert was in Australia, and this was, I think, one of the first things that he recorded on his own. Like he recorded his own parts and everything on his own. And so it was awesome. And then, you know, 100 Gex, we got connected actually through our buddy Benny Blanco, who we've worked with in the past, who's great. And he had worked with them a bunch and had mentioned that they were like fans of our shit, and we liked what they did too. So it was, yeah, it's always fun, man. I think that, you know, we've always been interested in, maybe sometimes for worse, but I think we've always been interested in so many different kinds of music within our own music, and those collaborations felt like they, you know, they spanned a pretty good gamut. We also had Clown from Slipknot do some stuff on the opening song on the record, yeah. which was sick too. And so, yeah, it was fun to kind of make those connections and to really reinforce those.
Well, my favorite, I don't know. I'm just going to ask you. I mean, there's also a song called Pound Town featuring Nathaniel Mott and Sean Foreman of 303, which you're laughing. Originally, I was like, okay, is this some kind of weird Spotify typo? But I can tell now you're laughing, like you guys are too smart for that. So what's the joke there?
The joke there is that we tried to get a feature on that song for like a year and nobody wanted a feature on it. And the label was like, yeah, we got this guy. They're going to, in the studio, they're going to cut it. And then we were like, yeah, they didn't cut it. They didn't fuck with it. They don't really like it. Or like these. And so at the end of the day, we're like, fuck it. We'll just keep ourselves on it and just feature ourselves.
That's so funny.
nobody wanted to come out and play with us, man.
Oh, that is amazing. Well, everybody needs to check out the new record Need from 303. It's terrific. It's just classic 303. It's what you want from a 303 record, and highly recommended.
That's so kind of you, man.
Thank you for doing this. I don't want to take too much more of your time. A couple more questions. I got a fan question here that I dig, so I'm going to ask you this one.
Yes, sir.
You guys have arguably the most iconic hand symbol in the history of music. That is pretty rad. Is there a story about how that first came up?
Yeah, so I don't know whether we can like take the pure creative like formation of that single. I think we might have like kind of taken it from just the zeitgeist of what was around in Colorado at the time. Like it might have been a biker gangy thing.
Okay.
There's something, but I don't know. We never really cleared it up, but yeah, man, I mean, it's pretty simple. It's like just, you know, 303. So 303 is the area code in Boulder, Colorado. That's like the telephone code. And Sean, my bandmate, again, so he got it originally kind of before we had formulated this iteration of our music together. He got a tattoo on the back of his leg to honor where we're from that's spelled out 3-O-H exclamation port 3, like T-H-R-E. And a side story, but he was playing pickup basketball one time, and like this kid came up to him afterwards. He's like, "Man, you must really fucking love 3-on-3 basketball, man. Like you got it."
That's so funny.
Anyway, so it came time to name our band, and we were like looking down, and we just saw this tattoo. No, I think it was, you know, there is a lot of pride, and especially in the last, you know, 10, 15 years too. I feel like you can't go anywhere in Colorado without seeing a Colorado flag, without seeing, you know, people supporting Colorado businesses, Colorado artists. And it's just a great scene out there. I know that, you know, there's the same thing, and that there's such a pride in the six, in the 416.
Oh yeah. Right.
617, you know? So I think, it's great. It's great to have those little pockets of support, and, you know, in the same way that you support kind of local food places, you can support local musicians and local artisans. And I think for us, it was kind of the hand sign. It was just made sense after that.
I had when that first, like the six Toronto thing first came out, I remember I was like, I don't know what this is. Like, I think Drake just made it up. Like, and I assumed it meant, 416 or 647, like the area codes. And then I had an argument with someone, not from Toronto, like some American guy was like, no, it's about the six boroughs of Toronto. I'm like, I've never fucking heard of this. What boroughs?
Yeah, what do they got? Like, Parkdale, Yorkville.
Yeah. I don't think so, man.
The beaches.
Yeah. You know your shit. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's funny. That's funny.
So you did live in Toronto for a while.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We spent time. I mean, I would, you know, Liz and I did long distance forever just cause, you know, we were touring so much back in the day, and she was so busy and traveling a lot as well. But so I would kind of crash at her place. She had a few different places in the city. And then eventually we spent a few years, living actually out in Leslieville, like in the, between Leslieville and the beaches out there on the east side. It was awesome.
Leslieville's really gotten awesome in the last couple of years.
It was like the little bit more grown up. Yeah, it's like where all the grown up hipsters go to like sip their little coffees on Sunday morning with their kids and stuff.
That's pretty much exactly it.
It's kind of what we all aspire to, right?
Another question, fan question, and we should probably talk about this. When we were young festival.
Yeah, man.
Probably the most hyped festival of the year, period. And maybe the most hyped scene festival ever. Do you feel like there is a resurgence of the late 2000s era?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've seen it. It's actually amazing. I feel like we get the best parts of that scene because we've been able to tour and play colleges, for example, for 10 years at this point, 15 years. And it's like, at this point, the kids are in college. We're like fucking 7 years old when we were releasing our first music. And it's just right. Amazing because, you know, we've seen that resurgence of that scene. And even, you know, I think we're all seeing it with new kind of artists too. You know, anybody from like a Lil Huddy to an MGK to kind of that whole scene of people, not that, you know, MGK has been around for a long time, but that really overt kind of borrowing from, you know, true emo songs and kind of emo aesthetic and everything. And so it's sick. It's sick to see. And it's great to see it come, not, you know, not just the new artists and stuff are getting appreciated for it, but kind of the originators of, you know, for me, the Taking Back Sundays, you know, the All American Rejects, the My Chems, and you know, the more niche bands that maybe didn't have the same success as those bands were fucking equally influential to other bands or to everything. And so, yeah, it's amazing, man. I mean, that festival is wild. It's I remember, you know, we confirmed it a long time ago and then kind of forgot about it. And
exactly the same story with us. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I think they announced the festival early, which kind of out of nowhere. And so I think a lot of people weren't prepared, but I think it ended up being a very kind of genius marketing tactic, but it was also, man, I think they posted it or something and Liz found out about it and like ran over to me like screaming because this is like right? This is like her dream festival. And I was just kind of a little removed from it because I'd forgotten about it, whatever. Also, my tastes of music are, I guess, a little different, but she was freaking out and it's been amazing. I think it's just I don't know how you see it, but I feel like it's a confluence of a lot of stuff. It is that resurgence of that scene and those times and that kind of nostalgia. I think it's also people are fucking excited to just try to live normalish lives again. And hopefully by, you know, the fall, we can get more towards that. And people are ready to go and have fun again, man. And I think that's a feeling that we can all kind of, you know, align with.
Totally. I mean, yeah, you know, it's interesting how you bring up all these bands and you're kind of aligned, you know, and obviously you've embraced like, you know, Emo Night and you've done all kinds of stuff with like Emo Night LA and everything. Is it interesting being aligned with that, you know, word and stuff when you have a lot more in common with like, I don't know, the Beastie Boys than you do with like the Promise Ring? You know what I mean? Is it kind of funny when people are like, oh, classic emo bands like 303, and you're like, well, like, I guess we were there, but we were never fitting in. It's just kind of funny, right?
It is funny, man. It is very funny. But it's never been anything that I've taken any umbrage to or like been mad about at all. Like I think we purposefully kind of overtly have always had our music be a little bit of like a bastardization of a lot of different influences and genres. And that's been, you know, cause that's where we're from with our own aesthetic of music. It's like how we like to think about music and how the songs that run through our head every day, like switch from, you know, radically different kind of forms of music and genres and everything. And so, you know, people back in the day used to call our music crunkcore. And I was like, I don't really see that, but fine. Call it whatever the fuck you want to call it. As long as if you listen to it, you have fun with it. And if you don't like it, that's fine too. But I think categorization of our own music has always kind of eluded me, I think. And I think, yeah, for, you know, we've been grouped in with that scene and it's been amazing. I do think, yeah, it's, we like aesthetically, we're further from whatever the aesthetic center of that scene is than a lot of their bands. But I think, you know, the vibe and like, we were heavily influenced also, you know, by a lot of musical stuff in the scene, but then also I think a lot by the communal aspect of it and the communal aspect of, you know, I think bands in that scene, I'm going to say our scene of music, like interaction with people is so paramount, man. And it's whether it's, you know, on stage, like looking at people and, or on stage, you know, calling out for, you know, people to kind of be more than just spectators and kind of take part in the show themselves. And then, you know, meet and greets on Warped Tour and really spending time, like you spend more time kind of doing the ancillary stuff for the show and meeting people and talking to people than you do actually playing the music. So, and I think that's a beautiful thing. And that's, you know, that's something that we've kind of, we felt always aligned with, and that's like what we wanted to do. And then really kind of found that to be so wonderful in the scene too. So I guess it's more, it's for us, it's kind of, it is aesthetic and stuff, but it's also kind of the vibe and the communal vibe and the, and lyrically, I think, yeah, some of our songs are different, but then some are pretty emo too. You know, whole first Want record was basically a reaction to getting dumped by our girlfriend. So like, fuck it. I guess it's an emo record.
There you go. So, well, thanks, man. Thanks so much for doing this. What are you guys working on? What's coming up? I see the only thing on the books right now seems to be the festival. The record is out. Is there anything you can talk about? What's going to be happening with either 303 or just you personally?
Yeah, man. So we're, Sean is the reason he's not on today. He's awaiting a baby, little baby boy at any minute here.
Wow. Awesome. Yeah, tell him so I said congratulations.
Really, I shall, man. Yeah. And he's excited, and we're the whole 303 family and crew is very excited. And then, yeah, we're getting into some other touring where like I said, we do a lot of shows for colleges and universities. So we have some of those on the horizon as things, you know, feel safer and things open up for those schools. I think we're really looking forward to that. It's something that we love doing because, you know, we both went to the University of Colorado, big state school, and had so much fun. We're also doing shows for the military. We've done a lot of shows for the military all over the world in recent years. And so
I saw you guys were playing Guam one time.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we've been to Guam. We've been to Japan. We've been to the Middle East. We've been to Africa and, and Guantanamo Bay and kind of,
my God,
it's been such an eye-opening experience for sure. That's great. We're doing some of that. And we just confirmed Slam Dunk Festival in the UK, which we had actually lined up to play in 2020 and kept trying to reschedule dates like for a long time and ended up having to cancel dates, unfortunately. But this is hopefully kind of a fingers crossed that everything looks good to do that. And I think we're excited to get back out and play shows and keep releasing music. We'll keep, you know, doing our own individually, kind of working on our own projects, which are a lot of fun. And then, you know, I think we're just really looking forward to getting out on these festivals and like seeing you guys and giving you guys a fucking big hug and not being worried about ramifications of just like seeing your boys and having fun and really engaging with that scene, both with our homies in the biz and people at the shows, man. It's like, I think the emo scene it's also really great as kind of a sidetrack, but as people get older, like even as fans of like the OG fans of that, cause it's like, I don't know. People are just very nice and people are very respectful. And like, it's kind of cool. Like, I mean, we did the Warped Tour cruise. I don't think you guys didn't do that Warped Tour cruise.
No,
did
you? Yeah. We would have loved to. We're doing the other emo cruise this year.
Oh,
the Emo's
cool.
Not Dead cruise.
Yeah.
And, cool. And we'll see you at Slam Dunk. We're doing Slam Dunk too. But no, we didn't get a chance to do that. But I bet, yeah, I heard that was just amazing. All of my friends that were on it.
It's amazing. It's super fun. And I think, man, you'll find that like just the, as we all kind of, you know, get more experience and kind of get more life experience, like people are fucking rad and you meet a bunch of great people on there and they're out to have a good time and everybody's respectful of each other's space and also just excited to be together. So it's, I think really getting back to that, hopefully, you know, when it's safe for everybody is something that we all look forward to.
Awesome. Awesome. And there's one question here. I mean, obviously, you know, you're talking about all the production work you do and writing you do for other bands, but one of your credits is Love Somebody by Maroon 5. That's a big fucking song. tell me the process behind that one. I noticed that Ryan Tedder of One Republic is also credited, and they're from Colorado too, right? Are you guys buddies?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. We got hooked up through music, and he was, he's originally from Colorado. And so we got set up to do a writing session in Colorado in his studio. This was years ago at this point, but, went in and with Ryan and, you know, just got to meet him and hang out, and it was such a great time. And then make music together. And it was, yeah, man, like I ended up playing the guitars on a fucking Maroon 5 song. It's very, very surreal and cool. And we had actually made the instrumental of that probably about a year before. And then I get a call from Ryan. He's like, hey man, it's going to be a Maroon 5 song. I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, sick, cool. Cause he was was in sessions with Adam in LA at the time. And I was, I think we were on the road or something, and he just brought it in. And so they kind of finished it up and wrote lyrics and stuff to it. And so it was surreal, man. So surreal. And like the only time I ever met Adam was on stage accepting an award for that song at the BMI Awards. And I was like, went up real quick. I was like, hey dude, co-writer on the song. Nice to meet you. Photo, boom, out. So it's like a weird,
For people that don't understand how this stuff works, that is so interesting and unique. Like, so you had no idea where this song was going to end up, and you had never heard, like, did you only work on the music? Like, you didn't know what the lyrics or the melody or the hook was?
It was kind of like a hip hop format in that sense that we just in our one day together, we're like just vibing out and making beats and making instrumental tracks. And we had kind of, you know, they followed a little bit of the guitar melody for the pre-chorus, I remember, but that was, besides that, that was like my only involvement on the lyrical side of it. And so, yeah, it's funny, man. This is like the remote shit that's always been like that. I mean, I'm sure you guys have worked that way as a band or with producers and stuff where you send, you know, we kind of started that way kind of in the post, quote unquote, postal service realm of like sending shit back and forth via email, sending little ideas. You know, a lot of people send voice memos and, you know, a lot of modern music is created not necessarily in the same room with everybody. And, it's an amazing process.
When you heard that song, were you just like blown away with how good it was? Like, it's a good fucking song.
Yeah, know? it was super surreal, man. Yeah, it was very surreal. And it was, just cause obviously, I mean, Maroon 5 had already kind of been experiencing their resurgence and, you know, they had been so big even before when I was in high school and shit. So it was, it was super surreal and cool. Amazing. And just like, that was, kind of the first, I guess, external song really that didn't involve the band that kind of did things and just presented so many kind of different ways of appreciating music that sometimes you don't get on your own, like going and see them playing it live, you know, like you don't get to experience yourself playing your own music besides on video and you know that's different. And so being out in the, you know, in the front of house experiencing someone else playing a song that you wrote is really awesome, man. And I really treasure, I don't know if you guys have had experience kind of working on other people's shit too, but I really treasure that because I feel like the things that are maybe, you know, a little bit inconvenient or kind of negative about one thing kind of counterbalance themselves with your own artistry. Like, you know, for instance, writing a lot for other projects or to have songs to pitch and stuff, you end up writing like a mountain of stuff and of which a fraction gets released. And, and from that, a micro fraction, if you're lucky, gets heard by a lot of people. And then from that, you know, so it can be kind of crazy in that sense, but then, and then conversely, like with your own artistry, like if you fuck with one of your songs, like you can put it out, you know, and the kind of the tangent from the creation to the release is a lot closer and a lot easier. But yeah, they're really fun, man. And I feel like they've kind of really counterbalanced themselves well over the years. And we look forward to kind of continuing to do that. So,
well, I bet that paid the fucking rent for a while too. Couldn't have hurt.
Yeah. Thanks, Adam.
Well, man, thank you so much, man, for this. Anything else to tell the people before I let you go?
Dude, thank you so much for taking the time. Thanks for listening to our record. What do you guys know? Are you playing shows in Vegas right now?
No, my sister lives here, so I'm visiting her. I unfortunately got COVID over Christmas, so I was supposed to come down here to you know, spent Christmas with the whole family, but I couldn't come. So this is kind of like little makeup Christmas in February. So
nice. Good for you, man. And are you these days, are you in Toronto or are you outside?
I live in Windsor, just right outside Detroit. I don't know if you've ever played Windsor before. Yeah. So I'm about 10 minutes from downtown Detroit.
Nice, man. Well, dude, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for it's such a pleasure to connect with you guys. And fuck, man, we're looking forward to seeing you guys at the Vegas fucking bonanza. It's going to be wild.
Yeah, it's going to be something. Like just driving down the strip today, I was kind of up that way, like just kind of scoping it out a little bit, like, okay, this is where the festival's going to be, and kind of just imagining it in my head. It's exciting, you know, this for everybody to be on this thing, and especially some of the bands, you know, I don't need to go on and on about this, but some of these bands like really were always small, you know, like,
yeah.
And for everybody to be so excited about them is just pretty cool, you know?
Yeah. It's awesome. Are you guys planning on touring in and out of that kind of, or are they
not sure right now? You know, cause we talked about this a little bit, you know, but we didn't know it was going to be 3 days, you know, it was we got the email that was like, do you want to play a show with My Chemical Romance in Vegas on this day for this amount of money? And we said, yes. And then all of a sudden it's announced, you know, and they're adding another day and they're adding another day.
And they didn't even necessarily like make sure that all the bands are, it's kind of like a fucking big dick move on the festival to be like, yeah, you guys will cancel your other plans to do this. And we're all like, yeah, we will. Yeah, for sure.
every band. Well, I was especially surprised when they got every single band to do the following weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, totally. Like that's, but hey, we're doing it. It's exciting and can't wait, man. I can't wait to see it slam dunk too. So
can we say we have a residency in Vegas? That's basically that, right?
I think anything more than two is a residency. That's
we got a Silverstein 303 residency in Vegas.
Yeah, let's go.
Resort World or whatever. Where it's going down. Fucking A. You live there already, dude.
Practically, man.
Right? You're local.
Yeah, I got a 702 number, so you know.
What?
There you go.
There you go, man. Well, dude, Shane, thanks so much, man. Thanks for having me. It's great to catch up. And yeah, man, wishing you and yours, you and the whole crew, Billy, everybody, all the best, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. Give my best to Sean too, and congrats on the little one.
I shall.
303 Junior. I love it. All right, man. I'll let you go.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much.
So there it is with Nat from 303. What a nice dude. So well spoken, so smart, and so honest. That was a treat. I hope you all enjoyed that very much. And if you have missed the new 303 album, very new, just came out, called Need. Get it into your life, okay? It's really, really good. It's a lot of fun. And they're playing shows. They're doing stuff. Check that out as well. I can't wait to see those dudes. Some of the best people. Next week, I will be back with another episode 304, obviously. I love that we got to do this for 303. I'm so excited. But I'll be back. Make sure that you hit that follow button, that subscribe button on whatever you're listening to this on, whether it's Spotify or Apple or anything else. Just hit that button right now, okay? Do it now. It's important. And I can't wait. We have such an exciting lineup of artists for this podcast for 2022. They're going to be coming at you. I love it so much. I will leave you with the tune. I'm going to go with a new one we talked about in this show. Here it is. Vampire's Diet featuring Burt McCracken of The Used, 303 on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See you next time. I can't stand Morrissey. What about the Smiths? She said on a first date, wondering if it's all in my head. Are you still with me? I think that I'm still here. But if I'm being honest, there's nobody in this chair. I sleep like a vampire, arms across my heart. Helicopters outside, like creatures of the dark. It's running in my head, I shouldn't be awake. While the world outside my door is sharpening their stake. It's okay, it's okay, it's okay, I'm not okay. But
Skeleton face like she's headed to a funeral. Are you still with me? I think that I'm still here. But if the poison's spreading, better stay right where you are. The death will be a live stream. Emoji broken hearts. She sits in the asylum blowing kisses in the dark.